I'm Chris Walker, and it's time to listen to the interviews I conducted on Island Life on Saturday the 4th of May 2013. I spoke to Brett Young, the president of the White Angels Christian Militia, and the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone. My first guest is in the studio with me now, and this is Brett Young. Good morning, Brett. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Very good, thank you.
So Brett is Brett has come to a few people's attention lately because he's been advertising his website and organisation, White Angels, and the White Angels Christian Militia. And I suppose this has come to people's attention because people are a little bit, well, I suppose, a bit wary, a bit fearful of the idea of Christian Militia, but Brett, so, I mean, tell us what it's all about.
Yeah, you've got it. In a nutshell, Chris, people tend to get this idea that militia are a bunch of loopies running around in the bush, firing at each other, and that they've got this propensity towards being a little aloof. Nothing could be further from the truth. There was some people arrested, in as there always is going to be. There was some, I probably won't name the militia on air due to legal reasons, but they'll find it on the website if they look hard enough. And they were planning on making an attack. Now, I should state right from the start that we're not aggressive. In actual fact, the militia most of the time tend to help out during earthquakes, help serve hot food, and do just good deeds for people.
So, I mean, though, you know, your website, which is extensive, there's a lot of information on there. I mean, there is a bit of, you know, there's sections there dedicated to weapons. You talk about, you know, martial arts, about using paint bomb as you know, paint bombing as training. What do they call that?
Paintball. You got it, yeah.
The, you know, you talk about going to the US for training. So there does seem to be some kind of connection with this idea of military training.
Definitely. I'd be lying to you if I said that there wasn't an aggressive element, but that aggressive element is only to be used during war. The militia that are training in America at the moment, and there's literally hundreds of them, if not thousands in America now, they exploded in 1995. There were 1 million militia in 1995, and that was only 1 year after they got the idea of expanding throughout the US. Now, it's gone as far as Iraq now, and it's right throughout the Middle East, and the militia are protecting some of the villages against some of the other religious factions that don't like Christians. Now, I don't want to make this all about Christianity. It is also about serving the people, and of course, just as we did with the Knights Templar back in 1175, we're formed to protect the people coming through the Holy Lands, to protect them from marauders. Back then it was the assassins, and today they're known as the Al-Qaeda. So there we go. You know, if we don't do something about it, what we have today becomes the threat tomorrow.
So you see this as a continuation of the time of the Crusades?
Definitely, yeah.
So let's go back to some of those American militia, because, you know, they've got a pretty bad rap. I mean, people think about things like Waco. They think about the Oklahoma bombings. You know, some of those American militias, people, you know, probably rightfully so, are pretty wary.
They are wary. They shouldn't be wary. They should be wary of some extremist groups. Extremists are giving most of the militia a bad name. Fortunately, most of the groups are just like you and I, people that go to work every day, doctors, lawyers, dentists, weekend warriors, so to speak, as I've put on my website. Just like the, think of us as just like the territorials, where people are getting together on the weekend to train for what we say is going to happen, and is starting to happen already. When I say that, if people want evidence, they should be very, very aware. And I think we're down under, we're not so aware. The Americans are very, very aware of what's going on. Now, if you have a look at the website, have a look at the internet, go to YouTube, and you'll find hundreds and hundreds of tanks right now, January, February, rolling through California. It's a quite a frightening scene to see 140 tanks, brand new, on the back of a train, along with 14-ton crowd control vehicles with 8-inch thick glass, ready to be used in action. So people say, is the war a possibility? We know it's coming. We know Third World War is definitely coming. I wouldn't take Korea's threat too serious. Their equipment is very outdated. The Americans have unbelievable equipment. They have. I don't want to get into tacticals too much because I don't want to frighten the people. But
so you're fearful of the US launching a war against the rest of the world?
I think people get the idea that Americans are aggressive against the rest of the world. Well, some people. I wouldn't say all people. Some people get that idea. There is a secret government. We don't have to fear the government so much. We have to fear the. Well, not fear. I never used the term fear because when fear lowers our vibrations and leaves us open to all sorts of wounds, we should be very wary of the underlying secret government, which has spent all the Americans' money. The Americans, they are told, the government tells them they are broke. They're certainly not broke. They wouldn't be if they weren't spending money on black budget projects. Even back as far as 2000, they were spending $1.3 trillion every 24 months on the black budget. So we should be very wary of what's coming. We know there's trillions of dollars worth of underground bases already built. Even Norway has said they can fit around about 1.6 million people under the ground should something happen. We should also be looking at cataclysmic events, earthquakes, the bunkers went up by 1,000, sales of bunkers went up by 1,000% after the Japan earthquake in 1 week.
So what preparations are you taking here? I mean, what, you're building bunkers, you're hoarding weapons, what are you doing?
No, at this stage, I'm looking into the importation of a bunker at some point for my entire family and extended family.
We could all just hunker down in Stony Batter, couldn't we?
We could. The bunkers, unfortunately, have to be... we're talking about steel plate doors that will stop C4 plastic explosives. Now, the real threat doesn't come from earthquakes. The real threat, if they have a look at my website, will come from the underlying secret government and what they're planning on doing. We know, from a Christian perspective, we know that the microchipping of the RFID under the skin at least gets some way into development. We're not saying it will reach here, where people will have to scan their wrists to buy before they can buy food at the supermarket. It might, but it's unlikely because we're so far down under. More likely it'll be stopped and hit on the head before, because these people like myself, we're ready for a revolution. Now, we're not going to go out there. We're not planning on making any attacks on the government. I need to make that very, very clear. You can get locked up just for talking about that, right? So, Chris, I'm not saying that we're making plans against the government, as one faction was accused of recently. Of course, that was thrown out. They didn't have enough evidence. We are, however, we will be continuing training to develop a militia which will be able to protect Christians and non-Christians alike when the threat comes to Waiheke. Now, we all know that the Japanese were in our harbours, in the waters, just days before the war, just days before the war ended.
So, I mean, it's pretty... I mean, you look out the window here and you've got this kind of pretty idyllic view. It's a pretty easygoing place. It's kind of hard to equate that with the need to build bunkers and watch out for impregnation of microchips into us.
It is, and that's what worried me. What worried me was the lack of information available to Kiwis. Yes, it's on the internet, but let's face it. What sort of information do people mainly search for on the internet? We look at the American Idol, British UK Idol, things that are happening that we've been stooped in this idea of MTV, and well, actually MTV is coming out against it now, but we've been stooped in this idea of continuing our lives on a 9-to-5 basis, and we've been blinded, and it's caught up on us. It's really coming from all angles now. If we have a look at the internet, we'll see just the threat that's involved. The Americans are taking this very seriously. A lot of the Americans are now training. They have fortnightly or monthly drills where they put the family in the car and they race up to the hills to get to their bunker in time. Now, when the time comes, we Christians believe that we'll be raptured 3 months into the threat. 5 months after that will be a trial and tribulation for all those who haven't accepted Jesus Christ into their hearts. I don't want to go too much into Christianity because we want to make sure that we want people to be aware that we're there for everyone. We're not there to judge.
All right, so let's pick up on another element of this. So, you know, we talked about the Christian militia idea, but also white angels. What's the racial aspect of this?
Yes, I knew you'd bring that up.
It's in the name.
Someone at one point said, well, don't you think people are going to think that's a bit racist? And I said, well, I'm going to take that risk. We are definitely not racist in any way, shape or form. The idea of white angels came from the fact that angels are white and clean. and we want to get that point across. Now, I think it's going to take some time for people to accept that around the world, that the White Angels are not a racist group. We're not into Marxism or fascism or Nazism or anything like that. We are clearly training for a threat that may occur. We say may because a lot of people still don't believe that it's there. But if you see 140 trains rolling past a level crossing, then you know we're definitely going to war soon. Third World War is predicted. It's in the Bible code. We have to go there at some point in time. The planet's getting very aggressive. But in terms of white, no, definitely not racist.
All right. So now a number of times you've said we and us. So who else is involved in this? The reason I ask is two things. One, your advertisement on Coastal Trader, you know, you're saying, oh, look, I've had all these views, but only two people have rung me up. And on the website, you know, on your page about the Council of Light, it goes six more members needed, presuming you're member number one. So who is we and us?
Okay, well, you mentioned the Council of the Seven Lights, in Earth as it is in Heaven. We're putting a specific council together. It's going to be very hard to find the specific people I need for reasons that I can't really entirely discuss on the radio. However, yes, in terms of opening this up to Waiheke, it is very new, and I'm being very, very patient about this because it's going to take some time for exposure. Now, originally, I concentrated too much on the biker element in the ads, and I changed the ads and made it more about preparing for what's to come. So the biker, the Christian militia, the White Angels, the Harleys, Victories, etc., that's just another facet of the White Angels. If you wish to ride a bike and be part of a very, very responsible Christian we don't like to use the word gang, but Christian militia, Christian bikers militia, if you like.
Yeah, that'll put people at ease.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, we're definitely not a gang. We're not planning on putting up any iron fences and, you know, getting into plastic explosives or anything like that. We're just a whole bunch of good guys, like in America. Now, I do have a target for 10,000 members.
And how close have you got to that?
In terms of numbers, I cannot discuss numbers for obvious reasons. It gives us a psychological advantage. They're always looking into our lives. We know they read our emails. We know that they monitor our cell phones.
Who reads your emails?
Well, the CIA has a lot of, and the FBI. For example, the Facebook element, Facebook is always being watched by Mark Zuckerberg and his team. He is a member of the CIA, and he's proudly come forward and said that his Facebook is the best people watcher, so to speak, on the planet. So I don't care what information I give across on Facebook regarding my own personal life, and I think people shouldn't get too fearful about that. There is some stuff going around where people are grabbing other people's websites, pinching photographs, pretending to be someone they're not. But let's face it, that's always going to be around no matter who puts a website up, right?
But yeah, you're quite open about your life on your website anyway. I mean, and you've been pretty busy. I mean, there's a whole section there about your various encounters with aliens.
Yes.
Yeah, so, and abductions, alien implants.
Yes.
Yeah.
X-rays show I have an implant in my forehead and right hand. These are the beings that I was involved with in 98 and 99. They are able to come through wormholes, which our own scientists have now discovered and are looking at using for time travel. They know that they can use these wormholes. Now, I used to be fearful of discussing this because I got locked up and tested psychologically. Now, I walked all over their top psychiatrist. I proved that there's nothing wrong. I've had all the medical tests in the world. I've had ECG, EEG, CAT scan. I've had everything, and basically nothing shows any propensity towards any kind of mental disorder. However, they will lock you up against your will, and it's really quite frightening what they can do to you in there. They take away your civil liberties altogether. The photograph you see in the top there, Chris, is the fake alien footage they put out to try and throw people off the trail. The bottom footage are the real aliens. They're called Greys. Now, I should stress that there are evil factions of Greys, just like there are evil factions of humans. So not all aliens are good. Some Christians don't like to discuss aliens. They say they're demons. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the CIA has a remote viewing program where they can go into a room and read top secret documents without even being in the room. They use their mind. Ingo Swann was their best remote viewer, and he now runs a private school in America, which I'll be going to at some point in time to learn remote viewing.
So, I mean, do you not worry that the, you know, the sections on your website where you talk about being abducted by aliens, about having implants put into you by aliens, about having, you know, psychic powers, that might detract people from your other, you know, your other messages about needing to prepare for war and so on.
Yes, good point. I'm glad you raised that. People will go there. Yes, definitely. They'll say, hey, well, I don't know if I'm willing to believe in this guy. That's why I've put up multitude numbers of videos for them to look at in terms of what the government's doing to people right now. For example, in Guantanamo Bay, you know, where they currently have 166. You touched on the point of the other information you touched on, just to reiterate on that. Yes, I was a little bit worried about that, but I said to myself, hey, it's time to step forward, you know, because you look at the ladies and the men from Sensing Murder. I mean, I won't name names, but one of the ladies tried to commit suicide 3 times when she was younger because she was tired of seeing the dead walking. Now, I can't see the dead walking, and to be honest, Chris, I wouldn't want to. I can hear the spirit realms. I can interact with the spirit realms. I'm an empath, what's known as an empath. Our spirits are very porous, so we can take on other people's energies very easily. I'm also very telepathic. When you just talk about those things, people who aren't aware of information in those areas tend to look at you as a little bit, oh, I don't know about this guy. But I said, hey, okay, it's time for me to step up to the plate and say, don't worry about all of that. Christ will take care of all of that. Don't fear. Now, I'm always preaching to people, don't fear, because it lowers your vibrations and lets spirits in. So I keep my vibrations up. I don't fear a thing. I'm totally fearless. I was mentioning the 166, for example, detainees at Guantanamo Bay. Out of those, I'm just trying to find my information here, Chris. Out of those 166 detainees at Guantanamo Bay, despite more than half of them have been cleared for a release. Now, Obama then talks about that video that's showing on the Coastal Trader website. The announces his own legislation. He calls their action, in front of the National Archives, he calls their action, the Bush administration, and their legacy a mess regarding the Bush administration, an ad hoc legal approach for fighting terrorism that was neither effective nor sustainable. Then he announces his own legislation intentions for prolonged detention, just like the movie Minority Report, starring Tom Cruise working in the Department of Pre-Crime back in 2002, that movie showed. I quote, there may be a number of people who cannot be prosecuted for past crimes, and some cases because evidence may be tainted, my mind wanders there, the possibilities, but who nonetheless pose a threat to the security of the United States. One civil liberties advocate told the New York Times, we've known this was on the horizon for many years, but we were able to hold it off with George Bush. The idea that we might find ourselves fighting with the Obama administration over these powers is really stunning. And that's had 1.25 million views. And then Obama then talks about his administration reshaping the standards that apply to ensure that they are in line with the rule of law. Our goal is to construct a legitimate legal framework for the remaining Guantanamo detainees that cannot be transferred. Our goal is to avoid a legitimate legal framework, develop an appropriate legal regime, to indefinitely hold prisoners for crimes they might commit. So the lady that's interviewing there on CNN goes on to say, well, Obama's rewriting the laws, basically, to fit in with what they want.
Yeah, okay. So your answer is prepare, you know, and you've got some people involved, or is this just you?
Yes, at some point we will announce our numbers. Psychologically, we have to have the advantage. There is a very good group on the internet. Well, very good. I mean, that's arguable. Some people say they are internet terrorists. I mean, they shut the FBI website down and within 7 minutes by flooding it with individuals. They have 155 million members. That was in response to the Kim.com affair. I'm not going there on the right or wrong issues of Kim.com. I think that's something personal that people have to decide for themselves. But in terms of the piracy, what he did, right or wrong, but in terms of they've overstepped their mark. When did the FBI decide they could ever step in and take over private affairs where one company should be suing another company? That should have been between Kim.com and the people he was allegedly stealing from. They were getting into areas where they're overstepping their mark, Chris, and we think that's not on.
So the let's look at a recent case. You know, the stuff with his name's gone. Just got out of jail, Tama Iti.
Oh yes,
yeah. You know, the Uruwera is the group there that, you know, the firearms charges and the group that were allegedly, you know, preparing for military assault and so on, I suppose.
Yes.
I mean, is that the kind of thing that you think we need to be doing?
We wish to avoid that completely. I'm glad you brought it up. I wasn't going to bring it up unless you did, because I don't want to overstep my mark here in terms of privileges. However, I did write a letter in years ago, which never showed in the newspaper, and against Tamiti, and saying he was going too far, he was giving Māori a bad name and activists because he was going too far. My view has softened a bit since then. I'm a little bit more sympathetic towards his views and his plight now, having looked into the whole Māori and European affair. I think there's arguments for both sides. I think that's great that we're repairing relationships in terms of land ownership. But to be honest, years ago, I would have said, oh, activist, terrorist. I would have jumped in the bandwagon at the coffee, the cafe, and said with people, that guy, you know. And to be honest, I probably was one of those people once. Now my eyes have been open. Now I look at it as, no, I don't think it's right to plan against the government. We are definitely not, as I say again, planning on making an attack. We're planning and preparing for their attack when it comes, and we will be defensive entirely. However, I think they got it. My personal view is that they got it very, very wrong. They will look into our affairs, and we've got to be very, very careful they don't set us up. They may have been trying to set them up. I can't really comment on that. I could be taken to court, you know, for saying the wrong thing. So all I can say really is my personal view is that they weren't really doing anything wrong out in the bush. Now, there's a video on the website that shows a very, very hilarious FBI agent. Someone has put the music to Benny Hill and sped him up to make a fool of him, and I think they've done a good job because this guy is a little bit aloof, shall we say. He goes on about his role with the FBI and basically pumps his chest up. We're not chest pumpers. We are very confident people with the militia, but most militia are not chest pumpers. We don't wish to give people that view. We just wish to prepare. There's a very good video in there they should look at, where it shows this man talking about these people, very suspicious behavior. Come on, FBI guy. There's four guys standing in the bush around a fireplace talking. They are situated in an area where a house is out in the bush. Now, suddenly, if you're out in the bush and you're talking around a fireplace, you are planning on attacking the government. You know, so this is how it can all get very much out of hand. And I think the Tamaiti thing did. Now, whether he's up to something or not, that's his business, you know. We're innocent until proven guilty, right?
Yeah.
They didn't prove anything. So as far as I was concerned, the whole thing was a sham. And let's face it, there's more of those shams going on in New Zealand now than ever before.
All right. Well, thanks very much for coming in, Brett, and talking to us about this. You can find out more on the website, which is thewhiteangelsride.com. Brett Young is the president of the White Angels and the Christian Militia, and you can find out where there's extensive information. I have to say, you spent a lot of time putting that together.
Well, yeah, no, there's a lot more to go in.
Right.
Chris, thank you very much for the opportunity. Much appreciated, and God bless all of the Kiwis out there who are listening and all the other Kiwis as well.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
It's the first Saturday of the month, so I'm joined in the studio by Alan Knight.
Good morning.
And Alex Stone.
Good morning. Just come from a distant galaxy.
Chris, can I start off by saying how you kept a straight face during that last interview was quite incredible. I managed to listen to the whole thing, and boy, there's a chap with some credibility issues, I'd say.
Well, you know, I mean, I wanted an interview. We're talking about Brett Young, the president of the the White Angels Christian Militia. And I wanted to interview him because I think, you know, people look at Christian Militia and kind of get a bit fearful and think, you know, have we got a gun nut in our community?
With God on his side. Yeah, yeah, just
and,
what we
need. You know, so, but I have to say that now, having talked to him, I think we have little to fear.
Yes. For those of you who missed the interview, you could basically sum it up as, I wear my hat lined with tinfoil. I haven't got a girlfriend. I still live with me mum. Basically, that was what it was like. A very sad and delusional man. I've had this long-term fascination with this kind of conspiracy theory delusion, and he really ticked all the boxes. It was tempting to just howl with laughter, but in a way, it is kind of sad.
Oh, we need eccentrics, but the thing that amazes me is I thought, yeah, I've always been amazed at how many community groups there are on Waiheke. But I was totally unaware of the existence of our Onaroa Christian Militia.
Ah, well, that's, you see, yes, you've fallen under the power of the One World Government, you see, and you've fallen for all their lies.
Ah.
They come through the walls at night, you know, when you're asleep, and they put little wires in your head.
Gosh, I didn't know.
Yeah, and then you see, you don't realise what's actually going on.
Well, I will go home and sleep easier knowing that we're being protected by the
home and listen to the podcast of the interview, because it was genuinely quite tragic.
Oh, sorry,
well, you know, it takes all kinds to make up a community, I think.
Yeah.
It does.
Oh, lovely. Lovely to have. And, you know, because I was thinking the other day we might have to kind of go out and rent eccentrics on Waiheke. They seem to be disappearing. You know, Eric the Red passed on there a month ago.
Did he?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and, you know, Mike Morgan. The old-style Waiheke eccentrics are going. And so I had this vision of Waiheke, the community board or the tourist agency, hiring actors to wander around looking the part.
<Yes. laughs> So, or maybe if there aren't enough eccentrics, then the likes of you and I simply have to try harder.
Yeah. And dress downer.
Yes. And try wander harder down the street forgetting your trousers.
But yeah, so it's. I'm quite heartened to know that we got some new eccentrics aboard. You know, that's lovely. Because, you know, this island is, you know, it's like a little ship of fools. You know, it needs its complement of eccentric.
It does. Yeah. It's part of the charm of the place, I think.
Yeah. So, no, they're good. All good. I'm glad the militia is out there. Apparently, they're a motorcycle outfit as well.
Yes.
Yes, but they haven't got any motorbikes at the moment.
No. And apparently all they're allowed is Harley Davidsons, which is fine because most of them don't work. So,
yeah.
they spend more time in the garage than they do.
Yeah, but that's
why
they've gotten victories as well.
Ah,
they're okay.
Right.
Well, maybe,
yes.
I've got a plan. Maybe the people that rent out the little yellow scooters, when there's downtime on the yellow scooters, they can rent them out to the Christian
militia. I must admit, listening to the guy, he sounded more like a moped kind of chap to me.
Well, when you think about it, you know, if Waiheke needs a militia, the vision of Waiheke's militia were tootling about on little yellow mopeds armed with sponges or something, wet sponges. You know, that'd be about our level of militia.
Yeah, I think it would.
Yeah, all good.
Right. So one place that they will be able to tootle around quite soon is the Esplanade.
Oh, dear. The ongoing saga of the Esplanade. Terribly sad.
There's got to be a kind of... There's the arc of your classic Waiheke stoush. It sort of takes off and it intensifies and it peaks and it fizzles. And it always has these entrenched two parties in the middle of it, you know. And the Esplanade seems to be your classic Waiheke stoush.
Yes. rather sad the way that it really has shown up the local board for going back on their promise to listen to people.
Yeah, yeah. How hard is it to listen to people?
Well, exactly. I mean, I was looking back through some of the election pledges last time round, and there was this repeated... promised it. We will listen to the people.
But there was
and we did. We just didn't say which ones we were going to listen to.
I must admit I wasn't at that community meeting last week, but I understand it was objectively reported in the local media where there were 100 people there in favour of it being a walkway, 4 people against. Well, that was the sort of ratio, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The community board in there listening couldn't figure out. They kept on saying
there was only one of them there.
But the community board member who was there called the for the majority.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the part I couldn't quite figure. Were you at the meeting?
No, Sam, I was working. But it appeared very, very well attended. Even at 4 o'clock, when I finally got off work, I drove past there, and there were still a lot of people there. So
it's quite a good
active meeting.
Well, it's got a nice, you know, it's lifting people out of lethargy and apathy.
I mean, it couldn't have come at a worse time for the local board, given that this is election year.
October
the 13th is the election, yeah.
Well, when they go on the stumpings and say, we will listen to you, there'll be some fresh memories, won't there?
It would be interesting, in fact, to ask pretty much all of them, this is what you said before you were elected. How do you feel you've delivered on your promises?
But there also seems, I like to bring things down to the basics, the simplest stuff. The basic misnomer here appears to be that the board is saying we need it to be reopened as a road so that it can be properly maintained by the Auckland Transport, blah, blah, blah. But when you think about it, in Auckland, there are many, many dead-end roads that are still properly maintained.
Yeah.
So the Esplanade could be just two dead-end roads meeting in the middle, so you don't have through traffic, but that means it still has to be maintained. And these people that say a road is a road is a road, well, you got your road, and you have a couple of bollards through the middle for emergency access, problem fixed.
Exactly.
How hard is it?
What do you think of the way that, at the local board meeting, some representatives went along from that meeting to report back from the meeting. Yeah. Now, they were asked by board members, why don't you want to share? It seems quite a personalised and attacking response.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm reading a fascinating book at the moment called Fairness and Freedom, which compares the democratic development of the US and USA and New Zealand. And the two words reflect the core, the foundation political values of each country. In New Zealand, our political discourse is all around fairness. Whereas in America, their political discourse is all around liberty and freedom, which was where you get the gun lobby saying, it's my liberty to carry a gun. So if you go back to the first point, you said, why don't they share? If New Zealand is built on fairness, sharing should be possible. And the point about sharing is not only people in cars are on roads, all the other people. So there is sharing.
Well, there are those rather curious parts of downtown Auckland where
they got the cobbles and stuff.
Where cars and pedestrians share the road. I'm not sure I see how that works. I find them quite disturbing to walk around.
Yeah, they're a bit scary. But what happens, it's like the old turning right rule. Everybody's confused, so everybody slows down, so in the end no one gets hurt.
But most of the roads on Waiheke, for example, the roads that both of you live on, are shared spaces.
Yeah.
Where pedestrians and cars share the same space.
Yes.
It always seems to me, and I mean, it's meant to be your opinion, not mine, but the issue is about sharing of the roading network. And if you look at that, rather than looking at the sharing of one road, you come up with quite different answers.
Oh, yeah. But sharing of the roading network, I can see, is a bigger issue, because I wouldn't want to share a highway with anyone. I don't want to go jogging down a four-lane highway or take a horse on it. You know, that's not a go. But as you say, Waiheke roads, you've got to be able to ride a horse or
And I certainly wouldn't claim the right to share, when driving, to share the pavement with pedestrians.
No.
I tend to keep off the pavement.
Yeah, that's right. You can have that bit, I'll have this bit.
Yes.
But with the Esplanade, there is no pavement, and there are people that want to walk it, so let's share then. I don't see the need for cars around there, really. How many people live on this island that drive to and from the ferry every single day and don't feel the need to go on the Esplanade? There is no urgent need to go on the Esplanade.
I think the what needs taking into account, and this is why I would support any move to sort of open this up for public debate, is that there were many people, myself included, who were quite sorry to see that Esplanade go as a road. I mean, I liked driving around there.
Yeah, I used to take visitors.
But now that it's been closed, I can't see the point of reopening it. I just don't see that it's useful area to spend money on.
Yeah. It's also, there's another area where we'd be going backwards, and it's a sad thing in this country. We seem to be going backwards on so many fronts, so let's try and make some advances. But the local schools have all reported a wonderful increase in cycling and walking to school. And Te Huruhi and the high school both are convinced that the Esplanade is an important school kid access route that involves no cars, and that's why they're seeing more kids on bikes. Mm. So that's a positive advancement. So if we make it open to roads again, a number of young parents will obviously be fearful of the primary school age kids on little bikes along that road, so those kids won't be biking to school anymore, so we will have gone backwards.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how the board defend their approach to this as we go into the election.
Yeah, it's a bugger with this democracy thing, because I know you often get into situations where you think an issue is more complex than the average punter can understand. And you, from there on, it's quite a quick step to say, well, I know more than them, so I must tell them what's right.
That's always been Faye Storer's great catchphrase, isn't it? That the kind of the weary scientist. What you have to understand, because obviously I've got a degree in government and stuff, and I understand the issue far better than you. And really, you should shut up and stop questioning me, because you can't possibly understand it.
But you can't argue against stuff that's irrefutable, like. Electricity prices in this country have gone up over the past 30 years. They've gone up. So the people that say they would have gone down were wrong. It's just as simple as that. The prices are too high. They've gone up higher than the cost of living. So the people that argue that is more complicated than that are simply wrong. The price has gone up. End of story. Let's take it from there.
Yes. Yeah. We're being ripped off. That's the baseline.
Oh, yeah, we know that. That we are. Well, I know there are complexities in that particular case that, you know, in a country with a small population density, important utilities do need to be subsidized to an extent. It's just a fact, you know. And that does complicate the issue. But a totally free market in a country with a low population density and an oversupply of electricity companies means there is no pressure to drive the prices down.
No.
And the result was the prices went up.
Although I got to meet the sales rep who's on the island at the moment. They've got big ads in the papers.
Oh, for the solar,
solar power.
Yeah.
I was gobsmacked at how cheap it's becoming now.
Yeah, and you get the subsidy.
Yeah. I've always thought of solar power because, you know, so many places on this island, and, you know, unless you live in the dense bush in Rocky Bay or somewhere, you do get a lot of sun on your roof. I certainly do.
Yeah, why not?
And we've looked at solar power over the years and thought, wouldn't it be lovely to do, but it's just
too expensive.
Completely out of our price range.
And
but
now it's become,
you look at it
it's
now,
it's getting
really
there,
getting cheap.
Yeah, I'm all for it. And it's one of those.
Plus, you get a $2,000 grant.
It's one of those new sunrise industries. You know, we could have all these wonderful solar installations, or we could build a new coal-fired power station, or we could dig a deep water oil well off the Coromandel. You know,
it's suddenly become something that I've been looking at.
There's ways of going forward.
We can actually do this.
I reckon. Let's do it. Yeah.
So what did you, speaking of, you know, the old oil refining there, Alex, what did you think about this this idea of making it illegal to protest near?
Oh, I'm all hyped up about it. I'm just busy getting the boat ready for a bunch of folk are going to meet at 12 noon, Saturday, 2 weeks' time, 18th of May, 12 noon, off the Coromandel, and we're going to make a protest flotilla, just like the good old days.
Good
you remember that?
Yes.
And we're all going to be standing on our boat, waving our arms, saying to Simon Bridges, come and arrest all of us. You're going to arrest a whole lot of us. Put us all in jail. Come on, come on. It's actually, if you read my column this week, it's a terrible abrogation of New Zealand's democratic heritage.
It is utterly stupid.
You know that old saying, if protesting changed anything, they'd make it illegal. Oh,
yes.
It did.
No, but it's just ridiculous. And this amendment that was passed is classic shock doctrine stuff. While the government is very, very good, and we must watch out for this, they're very good at diversion tactics in the PR scenario. So 2 weeks ago, while the gay marriage bill was being debated, they knew that it would have lots of media coverage, big rah rah rah, and they got all this. At the same time, an amendment was passed to the Crown Minerals Act, which passed this 12 months in jail thing. So that went through nice and quietly. By the slimmest of margins, 60 to 61. So here is a cornerstone of New Zealand's democratic heritage passing by one vote.
Mm.
And that one vote is always that political flim-flam Peter Dunn. You know, so our future, the asset sales is a case in point, being decided by Peter Dunn. And then the asset sales is even more funny because he campaigned in the previous campaign against asset sales, but he becomes the deciding vote for them.
We always keep coming back to this man, don't we?
Yeah,
there is no excuse for Peter Dunn. No excuse.
And we haven't even started on his sartorial...
I think the voters of O'Hare of Belmont owe the rest of the country an apology for repeatedly voting that absurd man into Parliament.
Well, what about the voters of the National List? Are we talking about...
Oh, dear. Yes.
He's a character.
Could there be six more pathetic words in one sentence than, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Because there really is only one answer. When anybody says that, it's like, well, I don't know who you are, but I know what you are. Starts with a W and rhymes with banker.
Yeah, well, I think our good friend Aaron is, you know, if you ever ask that question again, do you know who I am? He's had a, when you think about it, a public relations coup. I didn't know about him until a week ago. But now the entire nation knows that this guy is an uppity wanker. So
who
he's achieved...
Can't hold his drink.
Yeah. This is public relations gold, to go from an absolute unknown to complete not, you know... nationwide, tip of the tongue, everybody in every living room in the country knows his name. That's a jump worthy of the greatest PR triumphs in the world.
Yeah, but it's not a very good PR triumph. You know, he's
it's lovely notoriety, isn't it?
But yeah, just the image of this idiot sitting there sloshed in a restaurant,
but
saying, I'm going to get the Prime Minister, he's my friend, he'll come in and get you sacked.
Yeah.
I mean, that is deeply pathetic. Yeah. And even worse is that John Key is standing by him.
But hang on, it goes back a couple of years. This guy was a List MP in the previous Parliament, and then he lost out because he got slid down the list. He lost out because he faked his CV, right? So here's a guy who's standing for Parliament for the National Party, fakes his CV, gets disgraced for faking his CV. He doesn't get fired from the party. He just slips down the list a few places. So next time they come in with a bit of a more comfortable majority, Lockwood Smith goes, this guy's back in. This is the guy who faked his CV.
So the answer must be that they don't want whoever is next on the list.
Yeah, that must make them
Maori
feel
woman.
Great.
Next on the list is a Maori woman, and I'm sorry, I can't quite pronounce her name, Heretue or something like that. But yeah, but that she's next on the list. Yeah.
But it is incredibly annoying. And I mean, Helen Clark had this issue that she just wouldn't cut rogue MPs loose.
Yeah.
She just hung in there, oh, no, until finally they were forced to go. And it was all really embarrassing. You've got to wonder what goes through their minds, because really, for John Key this week, that would have been just a perfect PR coup to cut the guy loose. Go,
yeah
not
but,
having this in the party.
But
this
remember,
is unacceptable.
John Key has a majority of one in important votes, like the
but it doesn't matter. This guy's a minor list MP. Yes. He drops off, another one comes on board. John Key has nothing to lose by...
No, the thing is, he can't fire him.
Going man overboard with this
guy. He can't fire him from Parliament. He can fire him from the party. So he can do what Brendan Horan did.
Yes,
if Key fires him, the guy says, I'll stick with a salary, thank you, and I'll become an independent like Brendan Horan did. So you can't get rid of the bugger until the next election. Good old Aaron. I mean, how is he feeling waking up this morning? Is he gloating on his PR coup, or is he a little embarrassed?
I think he'd be a lot embarrassed.
But this is the guy who faked his CV. Maybe he's not quite there. Like the survivalist conspiracy theory guy we spoke about earlier. Maybe he's deluded. Maybe he thinks he is a good guy. Maybe he thinks he is important and we should know who he is and we should serve him more when he's pissed.
I had a very foolish friend some years ago who travelled a lot, and he was actually very proud of how arrogant he'd be on airlines.
Yeah.
And, you know, always insisting on upgrades, and I want the aisle seat or the window seat. I want this, I want that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he seemed completely oblivious to the idea that if you behave that way in restaurants or on aircraft, you're going to end up ingesting an awful lot of bodily waste. You know, unless you actually like the idea of coffee with spit in it, don't behave that way in restaurants or on planes. Yeah. But he just didn't, it never seemed to occur to him.
I heard
that if you treat people badly, they'll go off into the kitchen and spit in your food.
I heard a lovely airline story during the weekend. An Australian journalist was flying between Atlanta and somewhere in the States and asked for an extra packet of cashew nuts or something. And the hostess said, "You're not allowed anymore." Whatever. There was some little issue about the extra packet of nuts. And the Aussie muttered something and ended up with the words, "Fair dinkum." And the flight attendant took offense to this, thought she was being sworn at. So when they landed, the cops were waiting to arrest this Aussie woman, who had to then explain to the cops that it wasn't swearing, it was an Australian expression for fair go.
Oh,
so if you are going to be obnoxious in a plane in America, don't use the words fair dinkum.
I once heard of was talking to somebody who'd been on a connecting flight coming up from somewhere south of Mexico, and the plane had landed, I think, in Mexico City or somewhere on its way back to the States. And there was a passenger who was just being unruly and wouldn't settle down. And they said, "Look, we will have you arrested." "I don't care, blah, 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 blah." And they did. The Mexican police came on board and took him off the plane. He's presumably still in a jail in Mexico. So you've got to wonder, really, is it worth it?
Yeah, no, there's some things you just don't want to do, hey? Oh. Well, poor old Aaron, you know, I wonder if he's going to go back to that same restaurant and try again to get his bottle of wine that he missed out on last time.
Only with extra snot in it this time.
Yeah, that's right. Do you mind if we open it away from
him? Yes, make sure you open the bottle, or it's going to be Chateau Sputum for you.
Good old Aaron. But this is how can this guy be there, you know? That's the part that gets me. The people that make the selection for the lists knew this guy faked his CV. And all they did is slide him down a few places.
Well, I think it's certainly an example of maybe one of the things that MP selections should take into account in future is, can you hold your drink?
Oh, good point. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I'd volunteer to actually, assist political parties with this myself.
Oh, we could do the testing process.
Some of my chums in the brewing industry. If you can go pint for pint with me in a session at O'Carroll's Freehouse, and still be on your feet, then yes, at least you're safe to be let out in public. So when you decide to get your snout in the trough on the expense account, at least you won't make an idiot of yourself.
Well, I was driving in a borrowed car yesterday, and this Aaron Gilmore thing was going. And one of the talkback callers, I don't believe I'm saying this, but one of the talkback callers came up with quite a good idea. This guy said, you know, list MPs and the whole process of list MPs is fraught. Why don't we select our MPs by random vote? Random selection, like jury selection. You might get a letter in the mail tomorrow saying you're an MP for the next year. How's it?
Yeah, but then we might end up with white Christian militia moped riders.
Yeah, but but is that guy any different from John Banks, who believes that God created the world in 3.5 days or something? No. You know, like it's this guy's point on callback was actually valid. A random selection is going to be about as good as the listed selection.
Yeah, probably better.
Exactly.
I think it was the science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke, in one of his books, came up with this vision of a future government in which there are no political parties. The electorate simply vote on issues, and whichever issue is voted on as being the most important, a database is then consulted. The person most likely to be able to fix it then gets a knock on the door as a government car waiting for you. You're now in charge. But no, sorry, you have to come with us. It's obligatory.
Well, it did work
and
here.
There's no salary, which gives them and more incentive to actually get the problem fixed, and then you can go home.
Yeah. Well, that works here. We have the system here. No, we cast around this country for, you know, the most distinguished academic with a history of social science awareness and natural justice. And so we asked Susan DeVoy to become the next race relations commissioner. She's just perfect for the job, isn't she? We do that here. We look for the expert and we take them on board. I love that story. Did you hear who the other shoulder taps were?
No.
Irene van Dyk and Michael Jones. If Susan had said
for what?
No,
did they just
race
open
relations
the,
commissioner?
Did they just open the page at sports and forget to look somewhere else?
But did you see the Campbell Live show on Wednesday night? They interviewed this guy called Barry Lovegrove. He is a retired judge, a world authority on race relations. He speaks four languages, got a Vietnamese wife, has consulted around the world and lectured around the world on social anthropology, natural justice, you name it. He's got the credentials. He was on the shortlist for the job last time. This time, he didn't even get an interview. But they went and asked Susan DeVoy, who wasn't looking for the job, didn't know what the job was, didn't know who the person was who was phoning her, but took the job anyway because it sounded like a nice
sinecure. Well, you know what Barry's problem was?
What?
Was he quick on his feet and good with the ball?
No. Poor man. <yeah. laughs> No, I'll tell you what his problem was. He's not a friend of the Minister of Justice. This is an interesting one. Here we have a Minister of Justice who does not play by the rules, by the laws of the land. Because on this Campbell Live thing, they actually showed the requirements for the interview process for this job. There is a statute somewhere that says when you hire this person, the Minister of Justice is required by the laws of the land to find a person with these criteria. They listed them: knowledge of the treaty and international reputation and conciliatory approach, whatever it was, all good stuff, of which Susan DeVoy has none, zero, none of those. I mean, she's quick on her feet and fast with the ball or whatever you call it, but none of the attributes. This other guy that didn't get an interview ticks, he's got all of them, but except he's not a friend of the Minister of Justice. So this is real banana stand here, I tell you.
Yeah. What would well, it be fascinating if other government jobs were handed out on the same basis. I mean, chairman of the Reserve Bank, for example. You're an ex-all-black. You'd be perfect.
Oh, no, but what about Mr. Hodgkin? He passes money around like, yo, that'd be the go.
Isn't that how we ended up with the head of the GCSB?
Yeah, I know.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm.
Well, that's an interesting one because... But, you know, DeVoy's got no qualifications. This guy at least was a known, respected, effective, top-end public servant type dude. At least he'd done some miles. The slight controversy was there that everyone else previously in charge of the spy agency had a military background. This guy had zero military background, but at least he knew about government processes, etc., etc. I think the core issue there is the government, the Prime Minister lying about, you know, he lied about him three times. It's a bit sort of biblical. But, you know, he didn't know him, he didn't phone him, and then there was a third lie. That's the core issue. The Prime Minister lied about it.
Yes, that was pretty pathetic.
Yeah. So that was the issue there. I mean, the poor guy, but think of him. He's now the chief spy, but we all know who he is. He's not good. Yes, we wish him well.
Not as secret as it used to be.
No.
Well, we've been talking to the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone.
Did we fix anything this time?
No, you're not here to fix things.
We're not here to fix things. Just here to,
to ruminate.
Make light of serious issues.
Yeah. Well, if human frailty and folly is our interest, we've got good material.
Yes. Plenty of good material to work with this month.
And Alan and Alex will be back with me on the first Saturday of next month.
We certainly will.
Yes.
Indeed. And we'll be right by then, won't we?
Yes. Well, we're going to get closer and closer to the local board elections, of course, as we get through the year. So plenty to talk about.
Indeed, yeah. All right, thanks for that.
All right, thank you very much. You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 to 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.